Welcome to Chit Chat Money. This is our Thursday deep dive episode where we typically interview an expert on a single stock. But today we have two experts on. It's Robert Cantwell and Joe Kovaleski. They both work at Up Holdings. Robert is the portfolio manager there. And then Joe is an investment analyst. And we talk about dLocal, which is a fast growing payments company out of Latin America. Pretty fascinating business. They both know it really well. Did you have any highlights from the interview?
Yeah, if you know Stripe, if you know Adyen, it's a similar business model, but they're focused on South America. I mean, we just went through why they've succeeded so well in South America and Central America, and that is because of their focus, and that is because the regulatory barriers to entry. I liked using the example of Facebook a lot, where not even Facebook thought it was economical to try to copy what dLocal was doing. And now they're reaching the scale, and you can kind of get a good, pretty good investment pitch here of why, you know, that rapid growth they're achieving should continue.
Yeah, and you can see, and they illustrate it well, why this is such an attractive model. I'll save that for the interview. But before we get to that, I want to talk about our sponsor for the episode, Stream by AlphaSense. Stream is an expert interview transcript library. We've talked about them here before. They have interviews with experts covering a range of industries and tons of companies. I believe it was probably 10,000 plus call transcripts now. That covers tech, consumer goods, industrials, real estate, plenty more. You can always get good insights from expert interviews, and it feels like you're talking. It feels like a more candid conference call sometimes. That's kind of how I would describe it. But you definitely get a lot of value out of it. And so if you're interested in signing up for it, go to streamrg.com and you can sign up for a free 14-day trial using the promo code CCM. Definitely go check them out. Without further ado, let's get to the interview.
Welcome to Chit Chat Money. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer interview industry experts and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Money is a CCM Media Group podcast. Ryan and Brett are also general partners at Arch Capital, and Arch Capital may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Money by Ryan or Brett or any other podcast guests is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome in. Today we are joined by Robert Cantwell and Joe Kovaleski. I believe, I think we talked about it before the show. Yeah. I think I'm saying that right. Robert is the portfolio manager at Up Holdings, and Joe is an investment analyst there as well. Came across Robert on Twitter, so this is his first time on the show. So first of all, welcome to the show. Can you kind of give us the thumbnails on what Up Holdings is? What is the strategy there? What do you guys do?
Thanks, Ryan and Brett. Great to be with you guys. So Up Holdings, we're a investment advisor based in Nashville. We oversee the Compound Kings strategy, which is an investment strategy that we've been running here since 2019. And the short version of it is that we are very selective in the companies we invest into. We own about 25 businesses on the long side, and a Compound King has four dimensions to it. It's in an industry that is growing with a small number of competitors so that there's lots of profit to be shared. The businesses that we target tend to be market leaders that are either have high sustained market share or are expanding their market share within that industry. The third dimension is the reinvestment. It's really important that management is not pursuing growth at all costs, but instead sustaining the return on equity and margins within the business or expanding them. And then the last dimension of that is price. We need to make sure that the share price that we're entering a business ensures that we've got a really good chance of earning double-digit returns over multi-year periods. So that's what we focus on inside this Compound King strategy that we run.
Okay, and today we are talking about dLocal, which is maybe, I guess, the name that people are probably less familiar with. How did you come across the company?
It's a great business. Briefly, my own personal background, the first 8 years of my career, I spent as a private equity analyst at an institutional investment firm. I spent the next 8 years, I dropped into a company that we invested in called Everlane, which was one of the early online direct consumer brands that grew alongside of Instagram and other social media firms during the 2010s. And one of the key enablers of running an online commerce shop was the ability to accept payments from anyone, anywhere. So we were extremely early customers of the Braintree product that was acquired by PayPal. We were also early customers of Stripe that very quickly came in as a far superior alternative to Braintree. And what was so fascinating over that period was seeing how much faster a business like Stripe was growing than any of its individual customers, because Stripe was expanding at the compounded effect of all of its customers growing, as opposed to taking the risk of just any single industry or any single company. So the Stripe's business model had certainly been one of the most impressive things to have witnessed during the 2010s. And when we started managing the strategy back in 2019, very difficult to access private shares of Stripe. However, they had a couple of competitors, Adyen, that was originally founded in Europe back in 2006, dLocal that was originally formed as AstroPay back in 2009 in Southern America. And both of those businesses have iterated quite a bit during their existences, but for all intents and purposes, they look and feel very similar to Stripe, except they have different geographies, which gives them a little bit of different access to customers. And as we'll get into later in today's deep dive, being local has unique advantages to these businesses, because a lot of what makes these companies so valuable is the amount of local regulation that they have to contend with. So Adyen being in Europe is much better equipped to deal with European regulation than, say, a Stripe that's based in America. Similarly, a dLocal based in Latin America. So the three of these businesses we look at and compare, and they compete, you know, all against each other. And we've had both Adyen and dLocal now, since it's gone public, in our portfolio now for some time, and are excited to share more about the business and why we're so excited about it.
Yeah, and you kind of just alluded to it a little bit, but can you go maybe into a little more depth on what dLocal really does? And then could you provide like an example customer use case? Because I saw some of their customers and they were pretty big names. So maybe mention one of those as well.
So these businesses, officially what they do is they develop APIs, application programming interfaces. And what the reason why APIs caught on so fast is because they were developer tools that essentially were a line of code that a developer could implement into any system that they're architecting. So instead of a traditional sales model of having to go to a company's, say, finance department and say, we have this phenomenal payment software that you should use. Here's what we're going to charge for it. You should sign up for it. And it's slow and cumbersome and it's impossible and it takes forever to onboard that customer. Instead, Stripe or dLocal in this case writes this code, and then the engineers are like, hey, this code works really well. This is going to make it easier for us to accept payments in a foreign country where we don't have any nexus yet. So we're just going to use this line of code so that we can start accepting payments there. And this API notion of being able to essentially turn on customers without having to, you know, enter into, you know, formal contracts and documentation and things like that was a particularly easy way to onboard new customers. And then, of course, it was really easy for the payments companies to say, hey, well, we've got various folks using these APIs. We started out by offering them for free. It's really clear that there's some people moving real volume over this. So let's start with those heavy volume users and actually build a contract around that and make sure that we can get paid. And that's where the real magic really lies inside of payments companies, is that they charge such a small take rate, but they unlock enormous value for companies. So using Everlane as an example, we didn't transact outside of the United States, and we wanted to launch Latin America. And to do so, you know, dLocal had gone out there and accumulated a method for accepting all these various forms of payment that weren't available in the United States, whether it's Mercado Pago or some other bank you've never heard of. And, you know, through a single API, now all of a sudden we're plugged into all the common use cases of what customers in Brazil actually use to pay and check out for things. So that's what the technology does. That's how they built a business model around it, of taking a small percent of every transaction that, you know, happens with the company. And ultimately, this is why these businesses grow so fast with their existing customers, is because they get plugged in once, but then they get to grow with those companies for their lifetimes.
Okay. And that kind of does lead into the next question here. And I'll maybe go into something else where they make money off of the total payment volume flowing through that business. If you look at any of their IR pages, it is growing extremely rapidly. Is there anything else driving that growth? Just signing on new customers, signing on, you know, having these companies grow within them? And are there any other parts of the business that we're missing besides the take rate on the payment volume?
Yeah, so like Robert said, I would boil it down to there's two, you know, huge drivers that are the company is benefiting from. So the first thing is the geographic fragmentation. So, you know, in America, we have Visa and MasterCard and Discover and American Express, and they're the big payment methods. But across the world, there's, you know, hundreds. I think dLocal accepts something like 600 different payment methods. And, you know, in certain countries, less than 20% of adults have a bank account. So it's really tough for companies like an Adyen or a Stripe to compete at those types of geographies. And then the second thing is the technology changes. So this isn't this is applicable also to Adyen, but the point of sale has gotten, you know, infinitely more complex. So if you think about, you know, 100 years ago when people were transacting, it's just a cash register and cash. And then we moved to, you know, point of sale systems, and now we're on, you know, you can pay through mobile apps. There's stuff like Venmo. So that's sort of unlocked a whole nother dimension to that.
Okay. And is part of the part in South America, Latin America, that a lot of people don't even have bank accounts. So it's way, way more complicated than even having multiple countries in Europe. Is that part of the UK case what makes it so much harder for someone? Sorry, I forget the company that Robert was talking about, Everland, I think, from building something themselves and going into Latin America. It's just way, way too difficult for an individual company to do. Yeah, go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump on this where, forget Everland, Facebook. Facebook wanted to expand in Latin America, and you had local websites that wanted to acquire ads on Facebook. And Facebook themselves looked at the amount of engineering time and legal work that would be required for them to sign up 600 different payment methods that were commonly used in Latin America. And so for a business of that size to come into a foreign continent like that and say, rather than even say going to one of their existing, because Facebook is a Stripe customer, they're a PayPal customer, Facebook with their clout could have gone to Stripe and said, hey, Stripe, develop this for us. But instead, the most economical thing for Facebook was to go to Latin America and say, hey, dLocal, you've already done all this work. It's actually much less expensive for us to do this with your take rates than it is for us to build it ourselves or to ask one of our existing service providers to build it for us. And to get to the first part of your question about, well, what happens in a continent where you have a lot of unbanked? Well, this is one of the truly exceptional aspects of dLocal and why their take rates are as high as they are. They take about, we look at gross profit as a percent of transaction volume instead of revenue. We think that's a fair comparison across competitors. So they keep about 2%. They keep about 2% in gross profit of all the transaction volume that they process. And the reason why their take rate is so much higher than, say, Stripe's take rate in the US is because the actual acceptance rate anytime a card is swiped or someone is trying to do a payment, it is so much lower in developing countries than it is in developed countries. So let's take dLocal. It's estimated, this is highly variable, but the numbers estimated that about 90% of the time a transaction is successful. In the US, you're looking at a 99.9% success rate. If you look at dLocal's next nearest competitor, they're at around a 70%, maybe 75% in improving. And so if you're Facebook going to a foreign continent like this, you're going to put a phenomenal premium on the fact that dLocal has done the work to get that transaction approval rate to happen 90% of the time instead of 70 to 75% of the time. And that's why they're willing to give up sort of that extra take rate chunk than you'd see in a developed market version of the same company.
Okay.
And then even from Facebook's point of view, is they're in a customer acquisition game, right? They want as many advertisers. They have 10 million advertisers. They want to get to 20 million. So for them, sacrificing, you know, another 2 or 3% of that revenue is way more important than, you know, as long as they can acquire those customers.
Okay. No, that makes total sense. And can you list maybe, you mentioned PayPal, Adyen, just for anyone that's interested in researching these competitors, can you maybe say who they are, like those 70% ones, and what, like, is the Mercado Libre kind of in this or not? What's causing them? Like, why is dLocal better than them, all these other ones right now? Is it just focus? What is it?
And so eBanks is probably the closest comparable. So they were supposed to go public and they pulled it a few months ago. There's also legacy players like PayU. I believe they're owned by Naspers, which has become sort of the Tencent tracking stock. But yeah, those companies are more in sort of the old, you know, one-to-one point of sale system, where dLocal is more on the, you know, building the new technology. So they're the main guys that they're competing against.
Is anything prohibiting someone that's not local, so say like a Stripe or an Adyen, from going and trying to grow in those Latin American markets? Is there like any legal hurdles, or is it just sort of like they don't know the area as well?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, like Robert said, there's a lot of compliance, you know, issues with that. Adyen is in Latin America. So basically, you know, 2 years ago, Adyen's business in Latin America was the same size as dLocal. And now dLocal is 3.5 times bigger than Adyen's business. And I think Adyen doesn't do pay-ins. So pay-ins are basically when, you know, Facebook is collecting for their business, where payouts are like you're paying your Uber driver. So Adyen, I've heard that they don't do pay-ins. So that's one of the advantages to dLocal. And, you know, I think over time, it's something, companies only have so many resources, right? So Adyen, you know, if on a long enough time horizon, I'm sure they could build something comparable. But there's a lot of, you know, nooks and crannies, and like Robert said, to compliance and that sort of thing.
Okay, makes sense. And then the team is based in Uruguay, and this might be the first company I've ever come across from Uruguay that we've looked at or had on the podcast. So I'm just kind of curious, what's the management team like? What are you guys' thoughts on management overall? And then I believe Robert mentioned AstroPay earlier. What was kind of the relationship there?
So this is a pretty unique case. So one of the few times in which, let's say, U.S. investors, you know, will go outside of the United States and feel like they're investing in companies of similar quality outside the U.S., there tend to be two components. One is the software is of a comparable or even superior technology, and or the customer set is not as risky as the end market might lead you to otherwise believe. Because, so let's working backwards, in the dLocal case, most of dLocal's customers are the largest companies in America: Facebook, Microsoft, Google. And so you're not actually talking about a business that has Latin American customers. Then from the technology standpoint, where, you know, from everything that we've been able to diligence, one of the things that, and this will get into the management team, dLocal was originally founded by Sergio Fogel, who's actually a serial entrepreneur in the payment space. And when he originally founded the business, it was primarily founded within AstroPay. And they found that this technology was so powerful that it worked across a vast number of industries. And this founding team had the insight to know that both investors as well as regulators don't treat all industries the same. And you have the, call it the sin businesses of casinos and sex workers and other areas where you potentially get a lot of regulatory involvement that has very little to do with the payments technology itself. And they said, we need to separate this business such that this legacy AstroPay business can continue to serve, you know, businesses that might be under additional scrutiny for whatever reason. And then we have this other business, dLocal, for which it's going to participate in a lot of less regulated businesses, whether it's e-commerce or rideshare or other end or digital advertising or what have you. And by the way, that the founding team to have that insight is what also helped dLocal avoid some of the issues that, say, a Wirecard ran into. Now, that business obviously went down a very fraudulent path and had a very ugly outcome. But it was a good example of why it was important to separate these two businesses when they did. The founder, Sergio, he's not terrifically involved in the business now on a day-to-day basis. He's now working on a new startup that's got, you know, another angle, you know, on the payment space. But from everything that we've seen from the management team thus far, they've been extremely transparent that, you know, a company like Adyen has been their North Star. And it, from everything that we've seen, as Joe pointed out, you know, relative to their ability to take share, you know, Latin America much faster than Adyen, is that this is a team that absolutely can execute, has executed against those goals. And we expect them to remain the market leader within Latin America, at least for the next 5 to 7 years.
Okay. And speaking of Adyen, it kind of leads into the next question. dLocal's take rate is much higher than I believe Stripe and both Adyen, but Adyen's is much lower than theirs. And you mentioned it's because of the complications within the market. Do you think the take rate is sustainable, or do you guys expect it to kind of steadily fall over time? I believe when I was going over the numbers, it has steadily fallen. Is that something that is a concern here, or is it just kind of how it's going to play out, you know, as the competition or as they scale up the business?
Yeah, it's tough to predict. So we like, you know, we like putting ourselves in the shoes of the operators. So if you listen to any dLocal earnings call, they're always saying, you know, we don't run the business on take rate. And I think investors, you know, they pay a lot more attention to the take rate than the operators do. And it's, you know, to begin, it's tough to even define take rate, right? So if you look at Adyen's business, they report a gross revenue and a net revenue number. And the difference there is the fees that go to the issuers generally. So the financial institutions that are issuing the payment methods. Well, dLocal actually has some of that in their cost of revenue. So like Robert, I think, mentioned earlier, we think the take rate's actually closer to 2%, because if you take the gross margin divided by the TPV overtaking the just the revenue, I think there's some expenses in there that if you were comping it directly to Adyen, it would be, you know, it'd be a little bit lower. But it's really tough to predict.
If the end goal here is how to build the model, the interesting thing is you could build two models. You could either say, you know, this business is never going to grow faster than 20% a year again. It's going to grow at low double digits, and it's going to compound like that and continue to print cash flow. And if you do that, the take rates aren't going anywhere. But if the business is going to continue to compound growth at 40, 50% plus, then absolutely those take rates are going to continue to come down, because as this business continues to access larger and larger pools of capital, it's inevitable that the take rate has to shrink in any of those larger pools of capital that they access. And this is where, you know, when Joe talks about the operator mindset, they're thinking about gross margin dollars to the company relative to the amount of resources the company has to sacrifice to pursue those margin dollars. So I would say if you want to, when you're building your model, you almost need to make your take rate assumption flexible to your top line growth assumption, because the two are going to be inversely correlated to each other.
And maybe I'm missing something, but is why when revenue is growing faster, is the take rate going to be lower? Is that just because the larger customers are going to have better negotiating leverage? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Primarily, yes.
Where is there a specific industry that you think will be driving growth for dLocal, or is it kind of, does their solution apply to so many different ones that it could come from anywhere?
It's mostly, you know, high growth technology companies. I think you can go down the list of, you know, Netflix and Spotify and Uber, and they're all customers. So there's definitely a secular tailwind that, you know, dLocal has from riding really great customers. That was, you know, back to Robert's original story of what Stripe did. I think Stripe was actually in, I think they were in the Y Combinator ecosystem, if I remember correctly. And, you know, one became Airbnb and one became this, and, you know, they were just sort of there and they were able to grow faster because it was Airbnb and this company. So
sometimes we like to talk about these payment networks as it's almost like better than being an LP in a venture capital fund, because the success of these companies is a super high free cash flow margin business model that collects money from all of the fastest growing companies anywhere in the world. And if you're the venture capital company, you have to invest in a lot of losers, you know, to get a couple of winners that work right for you. But by owning these payment businesses, you only are exposing yourself ultimately to whoever the winners are. And that's an incredible risk return opportunity that doesn't come along too often.
And on top of it, it's inflation protected.
It sounds like a pretty incredible model. What metrics do you guys use to, measure the success of DLO or just earlier stage companies in general?
So this is a harder thing to do, especially when the companies are this small, because even a company like dLocal, they've got less than 500 customers. So you're looking at a pretty small customer base in order to build a business as large as theirs. So we focus on a number of things. One of the things we've particularly found for enterprise software companies at this size is there's an extremely high correlation between the number of employees working at the business and the number of customers that they have. So if you're purely paying really close attention, you know, and we track a lot of LinkedIn numbers that are out there to the rate of hiring, you know, that's happening within these companies, that'll tell you pretty darn early what their rate of customer acquisition looks like. Now, that makes it a little bit harder to track, well, how much are they continuing to grow with their existing customers? And that's where, you know, as Joe was mentioning, you know, previously, you can look at, you have other proxies for their growth. So Facebook's rest of world revenue segment, which is one of the fastest, you know, growing arms within Facebook. A lot of that is Facebook in Latin America, and a lot of that is correlated to DLO's expansion. So we also have, so you combine, you know, some of the employee metrics with some of these other revenue line items that get reported by a diverse set of successful technology companies, and you can kind of put those two together. And while you're waiting to hear from the dLocal management team yourself, you can get a pretty accurate picture of how things are going at the company.
Okay. And Joe, did you have anything to add there? Yeah. I know I'll try to talk there.
Yeah, I think Robert summed it up pretty well. Ultimately, the TPV is what's going to drive the outcome. Like we talked about take rates and how they're going to kind of fluctuate, but ultimately, I think for investors, it's how much volume can they get from all these, you know, and all these really great enterprise customers. And I think that's ultimately what's going to drive the outcome here.
All right. And right now as we're speaking, the market cap is at approximately $10 billion. I think a little bit less as we're talking. What are your thoughts on the valuation? Can you maybe give a few numbers as a reference point, you know, for that $10 billion market cap?
Yeah, so the one thing that obviously Adyen's the, you know, closest comparable. So if you look at their numbers, 7% of their business is in Latin America. So I think it's at a $62 billion market cap. So that implies about, you know, $4.5 billion. These are really rough numbers. But like I said earlier, Adyen doesn't do pay-ins in Latin America. dLocal's pretty much crushing them there. So, you know, we think there's somewhat of a floor there. I mean, the business also is very profitable. And that's one thing, you know, Robert mentioned earlier of the Compound King strategy is that we look for businesses that are showing clear signs of scaling. There's some guys out there that'll, you know, they'll buy software companies on revenue multiples because if, you know, private equity takes it out, you know, they think they can, you know, slash all these expenses. But for us, you know, if you look at the early days of a company like Facebook or Google, they were extremely profitable. And so we want to find companies like that are showing scale and you know, dLocal is already there.
And I'll put Joe, I appreciate Joe's conservatism, and we'll put our necks a little bit more on the line here. We think it's a $25 billion business. We don't think it's going to be that tomorrow, but they have all of the signs of a business that can continue to accumulate customers and TPV and sustain a good enough take rate to support their free cash flow margins, that this is a business that's going to generate $1 billion in free cash flow within a 3 to 10 year investment horizon. And we can't guarantee if it happens at year 5 or year 8, but they're absolutely on a trajectory to do that. And so, you know, depending on how you want to discount the business back till today, as Joe mentioned, you know, if the business hits a couple of rough quarters and they lose 40 or 50%, we think there's potentially some takeout value given the size of Latin America, as you mentioned, for Adyen's business, because Stripe's going to want to compete against Adyen in Latin America, and this might be a good bolt-on acquisition for them. So you've got, call it a downside, a floor at $5 billion, and then anywhere between, you know, 5 and 15, there's the potential to own this stock and still earn double digit returns. And you know, the way that we've been trying to build our position is, given how volatile an earlier stage company like this can be, you know, steadily acquiring shares anywhere between that, you know, 6 to 10 range that we've seen here over the past few months.
Yeah, I was about to ask about that, because I'm looking at the 1 year chart here, and it's been a pretty wild ride. So is that kind of just the strategy? You kind of have like a range of prices that you like to add between?
So it's always, my career has almost entirely been at this part of the market, and this late stage private companies, early stage public. And it really does feel like it just happens again and again and again, where companies that are private, they do really well in the private markets, their private investors love them, they eventually come public, but then it takes years for the public to develop the same level of appreciation and understanding that many of those private investors have had for that business for a lot of its history. And it is not uncommon for a small business like this, particularly one based in Latin America, to have a really volatile start in the public markets. And we don't think that volatile start is over. We absolutely think that there's a very high chance that this stock can be down 30 and up 30 in any given quarter over the next, you know, 3 to 5 quarters. But the longer, you know, track record that businesses like this tend to accumulate, you start to see less and less volatility in investor reactions over time. And something really interesting starts to happen when that starts to settle in, because you'll actually start to see the multiple appreciate even more, because investors are starting to price in the fact that they believe that the business now potentially has less volatility in its fundamentals relative to the day that it started. So this is, we always believe this is one of the best places in the market to look, is, you know, IPOs of companies that are a year in, the stock prices have gotten beaten up. There's been almost no change in the company's fundamentals from the day that they launched to the day that, you know, we stand today. We think this is one of the cool areas to spend most of our time.
One question that kind of comes to mind for dLocal is they have so many, I guess, big name customers already, so many big tech companies, that I would think it would, like, in my mind, that screams maturity, but their customer base seems quite small. So are they even close to a customer base ceiling, or is it much bigger than where it's at now?
So even within their current customers, a lot of businesses use multiple payment processors in different countries. So usually, and this too, this is, you know, extremely variable. But for the most part, you know, the largest processor will take 60 or 70% of the volume. The second one will do 20 to 30%. And then usually they test other ones, because you don't want to be, you know, dependent on one processor. But from what we've heard, you know, a company like Facebook, there's a lot of internal expansion. And you see that in the numbers. So dLocal, they even report, what volume is coming from new customers versus existing customers. And last year, 90% of their growth came from existing customers. So when you think about Facebook's, you know, business in Latin America, dLocal isn't processing 100% of that. So there's a lot of room to go for existing customers.
And to add more, there's a lot of nuance here of what it actually means to grow with existing customers, because it's not, this is where this business looks a lot more like an enterprise software company than a traditional payments business. So we mentioned the example of Facebook, you know, collecting dollars from small business advertisers in Latin America. Well, that's a use case that dLocal is servicing Facebook with today. Facebook is building other new modern things, say the Facebook marketplace, where they've murdered Craigslist and, you know, now they're enabling exchanges between individuals. This is a perfectly good example of where Facebook would talk to a dLocal and say, hey, dLocal, we want to try something new that maybe, you know, it allows a marketplace payment to happen in advance of the exchange. And, you know, there's a lot of different rules that we have to work around because this isn't necessarily offered today. And this is a very, I don't know if they're launching marketplace in Latin America or not, but these are the types of examples of where the payments companies build themselves deeper and deeper into the customers that they work with. Because a lot of it's not just about sitting around waiting for Facebook to grow. It's about how do we take more of Facebook's business into what we do? And so when they're thinking about their incremental technology and tool development, they're thinking about their existing customer set and where inside their existing customer businesses today, they can potentially grab more of the transaction volume that's happening.
Really great customer or really great companies can grow the TAM, you know, within themselves. So like the example earlier of the cash register, and now you can, you know, order things off of your phone, you know, that's new economic activity that wouldn't have happened before. And that's example of, you know, how a company like dLocal can grow that.
Right. And we kind of take it for granted here in the United States, but a lot of other countries might be 10, 15 years behind in that regard. So it sounds like we kind of know where the growth is going to be, and it's most likely going to be from the existing customers, at least over the next few years. But I think two questions I have are, can you give a reference on what their profit margins actually are? And are they trying to expand outside of South America and Central America?
Yeah, so first on the margins, they've guided to 35% EBITDA margins. And, you know, we don't like using EBITDA, but for these particular businesses, they have a really high flow through to free cash flow. And if you look at, like I said earlier, if you look at the gross margin, it's actually closer to 65%. So in the way that Adyen would report. So those two businesses are pretty similar on margins. And, you know, they're really high. And I think there's a couple ways for them to increase that. One of them is just, you know, employee count, because that's one of their big expenses, right? I mean, we talked about the financial, the fees of financial institutions, and their next really big expense is employees. So another thing that we track is gross profit per employee. So over the past 2 years, that's gone from 250 grand to 300 grand for dLocal. So that shows right there that the SG&A scaling. So I definitely think there's some upside there for margins. And what was your second question?
International. Are they going outside of South America and Central America?
Yeah. So from what we've read, they obviously are trying. You know, they're in places like India and China. But like we said earlier, there's a really big advantage to being in certain geographies. So, you know, there's a company called Razorpay that's in India, and they're running a little bit of the dLocal strategy too. So I would say, you know, much like their existing growth is probably coming from existing customers, Latin America is probably going to be, you know, the significant driver. It's nice to have options though. So,
okay. And last question we have here, it seems like they have a pretty defensible position in the market. You know, we've talked about it a few times here about how there's the regulatory barriers to entry. Even the giant companies like Facebook can't come in, and there should be a large tailwind from growth from the existing customers. What do you guys see as the biggest threat to dLocal's business that maybe we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, so I think, you know, regulatory is definitely a big one. So you got to think too, a lot of companies, I'm not sure companies as big as Facebook, but maybe some of the companies that are a little on the lower end of, you know, dLocal services, but a lot of them don't have, you know, entities set up in some of these countries. So, you know, Facebook, like I said, Facebook's really big, but some companies might not have a presence in Ecuador or a presence in Chile. And so that, you know, there's all sorts of laws in the, you know, how the company can, you know, dLocal can accept, you know, money on their behalf and then, you know, obviously ship it cross border. So there's a lot of regulatory issues. On the other hand, though, like Robert said earlier, a lot of their customers are these large, you know, profitable U.S. enterprises. So that's sort of the counter.
Yeah, if I were to emphasize the regulatory geopolitical risk here a little bit more bluntly, if dLocal is perceived locally as a tool to extract value from developing countries and send that value to developed countries, you better believe that politicians in these South American countries are going to work very aggressively to regulate that, to put chains on, you know, this potentially perceived removal of value from one country and into another. So there's definitely, I would say without question, the number one thing I'd ever lose sleep over on this investment is a potential sea change in regulation, because we're talking about moving money across borders, moving from one currency into another, and those tend to be areas that attract a lot of regulation. So both the problem that they are solving is also the thing that has the potential for most change depending on the regulatory environment.
Okay, I think that answers most of our questions. Is there anything we didn't touch on that you think's important for the dLocal investment thesis?
Yeah, another interesting stat that we had is, you know, dLocal spent. We love businesses too that aren't out there. There's easy ways to grow your revenue, right? You can lower your prices, or you can, you know, increase your sales and marketing expense. So dLocal spent just $6 million last year to acquire over 100 customers. And these are customers, like we said, like Facebook, like Netflix, like Spotify. So when you think of really bad businesses, generally they pull on the sales and marketing strings a lot. And dLocal is, you know, quite clearly the opposite. And, you know.
Yeah, the less you have to pay to get people to use your stuff, it's an awfully good sign.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for our questions. For listeners that want to follow you guys or keep track of Upholdings, what's the best place to do that? Robert, I know you're on Twitter. Do you have your Twitter handle handy?
It's Upholdings.
Upholdings.
How easy. Yeah.
Okay. And then upholdings.com too is the webpage?
You got it.
Perfect. All right. Well, Robert, Joe, thank you guys. We want to remind our listeners that Brett and I are not financial advisors, so anything we say or discuss here on Chit Chat Money is not formal advice or recommendation. We are, however, general partners at Arch Capital, so clients may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.